Barca scored.
Barca scored, yes. That's what we're leading with. But we're back again. Another fun one. We got the big three here. Ian's out on us, but oh yeah, what's up, guys? Three in the chat already. Welcome back to the Brothers Little Podcast. This is fun, huh? You know, gaining points, coming on after gaining points on teams. It's fun. Yeah, we got Hristo back for the first time in about 100 years. So how's it been, bro? How's it going?
You already know the deal. Inter wins, I'm back. it's been nice, fellas. I've been listening to you offline. I wasn't able to join you, sadly, but you know, at least I'm back for another win, especially the one after the Juventus game. The derby win was huge, and now it's a step in the right direction, and especially after Milan not winning against Torino, which we are in full control of the destiny for the remainder of the season. So I'm buzzing. I couldn't be happier.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. You know, we were hoping this would come. We were hoping, you know, we've been point counting for Napoli and Milan. I mean, us ourselves too, but really point counting on those two teams. And then it all happens in one weekend. You know, Inter go first, put the pressure on. These other guys can't keep up with it. Dave, what do you make of it? Is it the pressure, or is this team just a different class?
Well, I think it's more of the pressure. I can't say that we're a different class from Napoli and Milan. But we do have an advantage, is that we're the reigning champions. We did it last year. Of course, we didn't do it throughout this hard race. It wasn't a long race, it wasn't this close, but we still know what it takes to win it. So that's an advantage that we have on Milan and Napoli. I think our guys know what it takes to focus, to lock in, and what it takes to win those games late. And I think that's the reason why I'm confident that going forward, not only that, but also or looking at our schedules compared to everybody else's, I'm confident that we're gonna go ahead and secure first pretty soon. You know, like you said, Mikey, we've been counting points here for about a month. You know, we're always posting everybody's remaining matches, and this is one of the times where what we predicted, it actually came true. Because when you have a team like Torino, we know how tough they are, because I mean, we played them like what, 3 weeks ago, and then they held us to a draw. You know, they're very hard to break down, and we were lucky to score a late goal with Sanchez, and also Fiorentina 1-1 as well. This is the same Fiorentina that just beat Napoli. So those are two teams that we drew against 1-1 back to back, and Inter Twitter were going crazy like we're trash, or we're drawing against trash teams. This week, both of those teams showed their values against our main challengers right now by doing us a favor. So I couldn't be happier.
Yeah, I mean, it's very well said. I remember going back, watching those matches. We didn't record after Fiorentina. We just let it ride into the international break. But I had a bad taste in my mouth after that one. I was like, this was what we needed, and we didn't get it. But it hasn't cost us, you know, in the long run. That's one more point over Fiorentina than Napoli got. So, I mean, there's something to be had there. This Torino side, they look like Brimmer and 10 other guys today, but I mean, if that guy's coming in, we're in pretty good hands. I'm sure we'll get into that later on. But yeah, I guess we should start with the match that's happened. You know, really fun first half, the best first half I think we've seen in a long time, barring Champions League. But yeah, Risto, take us through at least the first half. Is it, you know, Correa making this team look different? Is it just everyone stepping up the way that they should? You know, all of our goal difference and XG, you know, all that good stuff, like, you know, evening out. What do you think clicked for this team?
I think it all started when after Conte arrived. The response that we have after a win and after a loss or a draw is different depending on the game, I think. But I mean, playing wise, but the the hot-headedness that the players have when they win an important match. And I think we'll speak about the Scudetto's going forward. I think the Juventus match will be the turning point, not only because of the result that we got, but also the mental strength and the I would say a six-pointer that we got off of that match. I think every single team in Serie A was watching that game, and Milan might have felt they were cruising and near the top and winning the league and whatnot. But we saw them dropping points 2 weeks in a row. We saw an uninterested, it seemed, sight of Napoli, and it all played into Inter's hand. I think the match against Verona is just a combination of everything. We played an amazing first half. We controlled the game, and I think the pace was dictated by the most important player that we had so far, which is Brozovic. We saw how Inter struggled without him, how we couldn't, pace the game, how we were losing balls, and there was no one tracking back. And his importance to Inter is just like Koulibaly's to Napoli, just like Bremer is to Torino, as we saw today. That's something that we cannot replace that easily or at all. And we missed Brozovic a lot in previous weeks. I think against Verona, we saw some nice plays by every single player on the pitch. We saw Skriniar, who was, all over the pitch. And just think of a trio of Skriniar, Bremer and Bastoni. And if Onana, is willing to play and is willing to make the step forward to play for such a great team. That's, Marotta working with nothing and he still makes an amazing competitive team. And we said it months ago, I think Marotta staying and signing a new contract is the best signing that Inter could make in playing. I wouldn't get any single player over Marotta because look what he's doing. Like, he'll get Bremer, it seemed like, for 15, 20 million plus some youngster or DiMarco, totally unusual, totally unimportant player for Inter since Gosens arrived. But going back to the match with Verona, I think, and you'll say that, correct me if I'm wrong, but, Barella was amazing just because he's back to his basics. He's not trying to set the tempo like Brozovic, or he's not trying to be Brozovic. He's just playing his game. He's enjoying, and we could see that. He was creating chances. He was all over the pitch. Çalhanoğlu, amazing. Perisic seems like a reborn player since the season started. And now with Gosens at the team, Gosens was the best player or the best wing back in the league for years and years. And now he's a bench warmer for Perisic, and that shows you how good Perisic was. And we're spoiled for that left wing back position. Dumfries has been amazing in the past month. Like this game, he was running like a horse. No one was stopping him. Like no one could stop him. Everyone tried, no one could. The only concern that I have is honestly Correa. He seemed uninterested. He was not chasing players like other players did. Honestly, Mike, just look at some other players like, Sanchez in his 30s. He's running and tackling players. He's trying to win the ball and whatnot.
He's not holding up the ball, though. We saw that from Correa in this match. He was holding up the ball, it's interesting that you brought this take to the forefront. I think it's an interesting mm-hmm. way of looking at it, with Correa, you do get a little less of that active, pressing and stuff like that. But that's what Lautaro does every single match. And, it hasn't been working in his favor lately on the other side of the ball. So, sometimes you need that active press. Sometimes that really helps. Other times, if you're going to have a guy that just kind of lingers, towards midfield, that's going to, just wait to pick up the ball there, try to hold it up, flick it on, try to get in behind. I think that is a different aspect of this team, and sometimes you kind of need that.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. And I'm actually gonna, not because I see Uncle Sharma in the comments, shout out to Pupu Correa FC in the building. But Not for that reason, but I have to defend Correa on this one. I do agree. You're spot on, and Mikey repeated it as well. He's not a Sanchez or a Lautaro, a guy that's going to chase you, hound you like a dog, pressing, trying to get the ball back. But he's more the guy that he's going to linger around in more of a number 10 role, more or less attacking midfielder, trying to pick up the ball and make those runs. And we saw a lot of him. And I'm sure because no goals came from them, we could say that, okay, maybe nothing happened. But I think that kind of reflected on what we looked against Roma, the first match that we played, when we scored those goals with all those combinations. And against Napoli, the first match, where he pretty much drove the ball kind of the same way he did and laid it off to Lautaro. So I think that this guy, he reminds us of what we kind of looked like last year with Lukaku, a player that you're able to give the ball to and allow him to run. And just from the defenders of the team chasing him, trying to close him down, he opens up space for other players. So I feel like he showed his importance, and we just got to hope that he could stay healthy for 7 matches, man. Because if he can, I think we're fine. We're pretty fine in this Scudetto race, and it's only the beginning for those two. Not below us, those two that we're competing with, from them dropping points, because I did look at their schedules.
Yeah, and also a point that Hristo also brought up that I really liked was, you know, that Perisic is back to Perisic's ways this season. I mean, two assists today, yesterday now. But the second assist is something straight off the training ground. We've seen that a couple of times this season. That's something I really like, you know, that flicked header on. Yeah, it adds another level of just unpredictability that this team really needs, and especially from corners. I mean, we know that we've got two of the best strikers of the ball in the league from dead balls, but you know, it can get stale. I'm glad it's working.
And the ironic thing is that the first time I think he scored with it against Napoli, right, the same kind of free kick and at the assist. So that's good to see that stuff that they work on in the training ground come off. But I wanted to also touch on Dumfries, because Risto did say that he's been amazing or whatnot. But I'm not gonna say that he has not. His story has been amazing. A guy that came and he looked bad early on. He was benched, rightfully so, and then he slowly worked his way back, from hearing stories about the guy learning Italian to hearing that he's working one-on-one with the assistants, and now we see the result on the pitch. But I think that a lot of times where we see the team building with combinations, let's say Correa carries the ball and then it ends up on Dumfries, 7 times out of 10 is going to be a back pass that he does. You know, I feel like he doesn't have that offensive mindset enough, which is why, like, I'm not saying that he's a problem for the team by any stretch of the imagination, but for that reason, I feel like that's a position that we probably could improve on, especially if it's true that Bayern want him and Bayern are willing to pay a price that we would be able to accept. I would definitely sell him and go for, Nahuel Molina. So that was like a little criticism on Dumfries. Not saying that he's bad. I love how he runs. He runs tirelessly. He has the legs. He defends well. But offensively, I feel like a lot of times he gets ball where he could take on his defender one-on-one and create, that he just doesn't do it. He doesn't have that mindset quite yet, or I'm not sure if he ever will. So that's for that reason I would say, like, yeah, watching Molina, that's the guy that I would love in that system, you know?
Yeah.
Since we can have Hakimi.
In a perfect world, you know, Hakimi, Cancelo, these guys that we have actually found on the wings are still here. But Dumfries coming in, I mean, we've been on, you know, we've defended him a lot on this podcast. You know, we see the criticisms he's gotten and still gets. I think some of it rightly so. I just wish he would, you know, just whatever his first instinct is, just go with it instead of trying to, like, think, you know, take an extra touch and think about it. And just when he just, you know, first touch cuts it back across the box, that's the one that everyone leaves, Perisic shoots, you know, it's a good save. If he would do more of that, like, my praise of him would be even higher. But, I mean, for Hristo to be, I feel like, summarizing the entire time that he was off, I think that was a good take. Because God, when was the last time you were on, bro?
The last time I was on, you know, we were fourth place and 7 points behind Yeah, Milan. No, but yeah, interesting point that Dave brought up. But I think we shouldn't give up on Denzel just now. He's young. He's progressing very well, and he's been at the club for not even a season. We cannot just give up for a player like him.
No, I agree. I'll raise my hand on this one. I'm definitely nitpicking. It's one of those situations where you're watching the game, and then you're like, damn, we could probably have a guy that could do better there. But it's not like I'm saying that he's a problem or something that we need to focus on. I agree. I'm definitely nitpicking or I'm being picky on this one.
I completely agree with you. I was the one that said when he arrived within the first few months, we could see him, you know, his athletic abilities and physical abilities have been amazing. He lacks technical ability, and that has been a problem since childhood, it seems like, because I've read some interviews by his old coach that said, you know, he could run a lot and he would race all over the place, but his technical ability needs to be worked on. And if that's a problem, let's say, that he had since the birth of his career, yeah, that's not something that he has successfully
solved overnight. Yeah.
But you know, there's another player at Torino that could solve some of those problems.
Absolutely. We just watched them.
I love them.
Absolutely devour Milan. I think every single ball I saw cut out, every single guy that got stopped in the Torino box, it was Bremer.
Yeah, Bremer, I mean, he wasn't talking about Bremer. He was talking about Single, right? Single.
We're talking about Sino? Okay.
Yeah, we're going to get to Bremer. I got too excited.
Bremer deserves a whole episode on its own.
A whole episode for himself.
I've tweeted out like a month ago, he has that Koulibaly effect, something that makes him unbeatable. He's one step ahead of every single player that or striker that he
reads the game very well.
Oh my God.
But right before we dive too deep on Bremer, but Single, another thing that I love about Single is that he seems to have that animosity towards Theo Hernandez. Like, he's always bullying him, kind of like pushing him, taking little cheap shots on him. That's something that will make Inter fans like you. So I noticed that. But
he's like 6'3" as well.
Yeah, he's a big guy. I think they recently turned down an offer from Tottenham. So I don't know if they're selling him. I don't know if they're willing to.
Look, never doubt an Italian club to fuck up the system. Like, they'll think of something like, NBA can fuck off, you know, payable for 5 years. We can guarantee you, I don't know, heaven, paradise and whatnot, fruits for every single day. Like, I can imagine like an offer that Torino cannot, you know, reject.
Refuse.
I don't think there's one that we can give them that they can't refuse, though.
From Tottenham, from the
Premier League, they can give anything. I mean,
bro, we're signing Bremer, their best player by far. Why do you think we cannot sign Single?
No, that's true. But I think that the Bremer situation, if it's true what's being reported, the player's will has a lot to do with it. You know, it's
of
like
I'm
sure you're reading stuff like, oh, he's promised himself to enter. He's not going to go nowhere else in Italy, stuff like that. So it's like, it seems like almost like the Vlahovic type of situation where a player is deciding, yo, I want this team. That's where I want to go. You guys better work something out, you know? But I don't know. I would love either Single or Nahuel Molina. But honestly, Molina is my number one choice. I like him. You saw that goal he scored last week against Cagliari, I think it was? No?
Bro, Single it was like, I don't know, lob. I like Single a lot, but I don't know. I think it's healthy to have a competition on the wing back position, because playing at all fronts, we've seen last season, especially with Conte, how needy that position is.
Let me get you stuck right now, Risto, and don't you log out either. I'm about to ask you a question. You have to answer it. Okay, we all hear Risto talking about it's good to have competition and all that stuff. So does that mean you would be okay with us bringing in Cuadrado as a backup right wing back?
Absolutely, yes.
Damn. Despite his attitude and how I don't like the guy.
I don't like him, but if your job is to win the Scudetto, we've agreed on it. We don't have players that know how to fall down and get you a penalty
for
a foul. You know, that gets you something that the other team, you know, fucking hate you about that. I don't like Cuadrado. I don't like Chiellini as well. But Chiellini has been the best center back that I've seen play in my lifetime by far. And he's flopping left and right.
I guess it's one of those situations that, like, you love if you're on the team and you hate him if he's not on your team. You know, but I agree. Most guys that I even float the idea of Cuadrado to, I'm talking about Inter fans, they don't even want to hear it, regardless of football reasons, regardless of what the fit would be. Because I guess it makes sense. Because, for example, right now we're linked to Dybala as well. I would love to have Dybala, but I feel like a guy like Cuadrado, he's more Juve than Dybala. He's the guy that's always doing the diving, always doing the trying to buy a foul and stuff like that, you know? So I don't know, man.
Don't get fooled by that, because Vidal was, you know, the embodiment of Juventus. Cheating, flopping, winning with Juventus, I don't know, tattooing Juventus on his body. And you know what? He fucking celebrated against them when he scored for Inter. There was no tomorrow. Despite of Juventus not giving you what you want and Inter gives you what you want, I think the revenge plays a huge factor. I agree. I could choose, I wouldn't sign him. But if Marotta can sign him for free on a year or two, I think he'll do it, because he has the experience, he has the knowledge, he has won a lot.
He's a fit.
Downside.
I agree.
There's two sides to also look at things. Yeah.
And also that good comment I see down there from Indro Hari, the kid from Cagliari. I saw him. When did Juve play, yesterday or early? They played yesterday. I saw him yesterday as well. He's a talented kid, but I don't think that's a guy that would be ready to start for us quite yet. Probably in a couple. He's a young kid.
Bellanova.
Bellanova. Yeah. Is he owned by Milan or?
There's so many Novas. There's Porta Nova, Bellanova.
Bellanova was a Milan kid, Primavera kid. I think born somewhere around Milan, and he's been a Milan kid since day one. I think they sold him for Plus Valenza to Bordeaux, and then Bordeaux, you know, fucked him in Italy after he flopped for a year or two. Mm-hmm. That's the story. I like him, but there are a lot of wingbacks that I would rather sign than him. He's not a bad player, but Singo, Cuadrado, as you said, Molina. You know, there are a few that I would sign before I consider Villanova.
Yeah. I mean, you guys want to talk? Since we're about ready to go drool about a center back that we don't even own. Do we want to drool about the one that we own first? You know,
yes.
You know,
yes. I feel like we're almost forgetting how great he is, because
we're taking him for granted.
Does it?
Yeah.
Quick question before we start. You know, the praising Skriniar. What about De Vrij? What happened to him in the past 3-4 months? He looks like a shell of himself.
I mean, I know for a fact the past month or so he's been injured, which is the reason why they subbed him off at halftime yesterday for D'Ambrosio. It's like they said he didn't re-injure it or anything, but it got tight, so they didn't want to risk him because they believe in D'Ambrosio, and we saw why. But I guess it's been a combination of a drop of form and injury, and I'm sure he's been on Twitter seeing us selling him and stuff like that too, and seeing the Bremer agendas. So he's like, "Fuck it, I'm not gonna play hard for you guys no more," you know.
Yeah, I mean, he's been looking like he was on the way out since, you know, the beginning of the season. You know, it just happens that Bremer is the guy that has emerged and will be a great replacement, and also it just fits Inzaghi better. I mean, De Vrij and Inzaghi know each other from Lazio. Like, they know who each other are, how their styles fit with each other. And I just never thought it was a very great fit. I felt like that was kind of part of the reason he left Lazio. And I mean, now that he's here, you know, the higher line, it doesn't fit him. He knows he can go somewhere like Spurs, where Conte is, who can keep him deep. And we're seeing like this higher line, the higher pressure. I think that also is contributing to some of his fitness issues. Because he was more injury prone at Lazio than he was when he got to Inter. I mean, that could also be like Pintos or whatever you want to say. But, yeah, you know, there has been a change since Inzaghi got here. And I think both of them know that, like, all right, let's get through this season. Let's, you know, do the best with what we've got. And then if we can get you out, we'll get you out. You know, it'll be better for everybody.
Yeah, I mean, no, those are great points, Mikey. And you make them all the time about De Vrij and Inzaghi. And I couldn't agree more. I couldn't agree more. It's definitely something there. But yeah, Skriniar, man. I'm sure you guys saw it live, that double save, and then the video was going around as well. Man, even if you're on the field with this guy, you see a guy do that, even if you're tired, man, it's like some of his energy is gonna rub off on you too, man. He's gonna give you the will to battle, just like he's battling for the shirt. And that's why this guy should be our captain, just like Mattia posted. I'm sure 99% of Inter fans want Skriniar to be the captain at this point. We love Barella. We'll take him as a vice since for his history for the club and stuff like that. But at this point, it shouldn't even be a discussion. There's a guy that's clearly deserving of it. And it would be a bad look if we didn't give it to Skriniar, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Skriniar, we had the one season where, you know, Conte came in and he couldn't find his feet in the back three. There were some questions around him that just looks like nonsense now. Because if we would have sold him at that point for what, like maybe like 45 million to, ironically, Spurs, I think, was the team that wanted him.
Listen, this situation, ironically, as a guy that's always pushing a Skriniar agenda, I always have his shirt in the back. I was one of the guys that was like, you know what, he can't work out in the back three, you know, because, and I'm not just saying it just at my ass. It's something that we all watch the games, guys. He struggled mightily. In the back three, and I was like, bro, we know Skriniar, he's more of a clunky type of defender. He's not fluid enough, and he would need to be able to read the game better and stuff like that. And then also, when it was being reported that we were going to swap him with Ndombele, who was a hot prospect at the time, I was with it. You know what I mean? So that's one of the things that I'm glad the club did not do. But yeah, that's one of the things I definitely got wrong, because I was like, yo, I don't think he's going to be able to learn it in the back three. So let's go ahead and cut our losses. I'm glad the club kept him, and I want him to stay forever now, man, forever. That's a guy that needs to stay forever. I wanted to ask you guys this though, since we're still talking about us. We all spoke about the first half, beautiful first half, nice flowing football. We saw Correa's impact or whatnot. Very, very well. That's all good and well. But to me, it seems like Inzaghi came in the second half with the overt intention of just maintaining what we have, playing much lower, not attacking as much. And then we saw the sub that he made, the 60th minute, he took off Correa and put Gosens. So that pretty much means that you're playing defensively at this point. So what do you guys think? Do you guys like the approach? Or, I mean, we can't argue with the result, but I mean, I felt like that approach was kind of curious. What do you guys think?
I mean, it's something we got very used to under Conte. And I think it's something that Inzaghi has wanted to have, you know, instilled on this team for a while. It just hasn't worked. I mean, you look back to losing the lead against Juve, the last derby, how that went. Yeah, both of them. Yeah, it was not like they just could not hold it together for 90 minutes. And it seems like now that he's gotten them to hold it together for 90 minutes, he's saying work smarter, not harder. We have another game Thursday. I mean, not Thursday, another game Friday, followed by a midweek game against Milan and the Coppa. So he knows his bench isn't really there also. And you're not going to bring on a guy like Gagliardini and try to play free-flowing football. Like, that's just not how this works. That's not how this game works. That guy's not doing that. So I just feel like he looked at the situation. Not Napoli. Hellas Verona don't have too much to play for. They're comfortably around ninth. I think that is, you know, a success for them this season, given that they just lost one of the best coaches in the league in Juric. Their turnover is always very high. So I think this is just – this was kind of, you know, they pushed a little bit in the second half, but I didn't feel like they had the urgency that even, you know, someone battling relegation right now, like a Cagliari or somebody would have. So yeah. I felt like it was just kind of the match where he could, and also that this team knows that they can. So, yeah, that's what it is for me.
Yeah, I guess I agree. I guess you talked me into it because we can't really think of any clear-cut chances that they did create. It was a lot of balls into the box, which is something that we feel comfortable with Skriniar in there and whoever else. I guess that's what it was. It was more of a professional team already keeping what they have, being professional and making sure you could conserve energy and avoid injuries. I mean, I agree. I'm cool with the result, and I'm happy with how he managed it. Thanks to the assistance of Mikey, because I was ready to say, what's up, Dad? This ain't Lazio. Like, you don't come already like I'm 2-0. I'm gonna defend for 45 minutes. But I guess it does make sense, you know, in the long run.
You know, not something I want to see all the time. You know, I don't want to see that every match. I would have liked us to keep pushing, you know. I mean, we had two in 30 minutes. It felt like a 5-1, 6-0 game.
That's what I thought as well.
But, you know, this team really did press hard early to go out and get their goals. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I thought it was appropriate for the time. But, yeah, I understand. It wasn't as fun. You know, I was sitting there. I was like, damn, bro. Like, I thought we were going to have, like, 4 or 5 goals here. Like, spread the love around a little bit. But, no, it was pragmatic.
And it's crazy because 2-0 is somewhat of a fragile lead, you know, just because of the psychology of football. It is if you're up 2-0 and then the team scores a goal, it becomes 2-1, they automatically get the momentum, and psychologically that's an advantage. That's how I feel. That's why I always say, like, 2-0 is kind of like a fragile advantage, but we did what we needed to do, I guess. You guys want to talk about the teams that helped us out, Fiorentina, Torino?
I wanted to pull up one more thing from this match just to kind of get y'all's thoughts about the start for DeMarco. I thought it was a good start, but, I mean, it kind of came out of nowhere. I know Sharma mentioned yesterday that it had been rumored, but I didn't see it as being, you know, I didn't see it. Maybe I just missed it. But, yeah, what did you guys think about that? You know, we haven't seen him in a while. We've seen they'd rather, you know, play D'Ambrosio on the right, put Skriniar in the middle, you know, try to avoid playing DeMarco for a while. But, what do you guys make of his start and, you know, that choice?
Personally, I didn't like it at first. At first sight, I didn't like it because this is a match that – matter of fact, not this is a match. Every single match going forward is a final, you know. So this is not when you start experimenting with stuff and saying, nah, you know what, let me put DeMarco instead. Let me do this. Let me do that. It's not like you got a midweek Champions League clash that you have to prepare for. You know, like, literally we played 7 days before, the day before. So everybody was fresh. There was no fatigue as an excuse. You know, so I was like, no, I don't like it. We have to start our strongest 11 and try to get the win from the get-go. But we saw, watching the match, we saw why he did it. Because I know you guys remember that one particular run that he had all the way, and he should have scored, in my opinion. I guess it was just he was just so surprised that he still had the ball in the box, and then he just did some bullshit shot. But I felt like if he hit the ball, like, we know he could hit it, he could have scored there. But we saw that he brought that constant threat, combining with Perisic. Not to say that Bastoni can't do it, but let's be honest, DeMarco does it at a higher level because he is an actual wing back. So I guess that's the reason why he did it. It was more of a tactical thing, not just a experimenting or resting players. So I saw why he did it, and kudos to him. There's a reason why we're talking about it on YouTube, and he's the guy getting paid millions of dollars to do it. You know, so he was right. He knew what he was doing, and we can't criticize him.
Yeah, I mean, that is true. Yeah, he's getting paid millions, and I'm sitting here behind a screen.
Exactly. Yeah, Risto's trying to avoid this one.
No, I'm not trying to avoid anything. I think he had a decent match. Partially, I think, to go back to Dave's point, I think you know, keeping the result 2-0 in the second half made the most sense because, as Mike said, there are four games within 2 weeks. And although not Champions League, I think these few matches are more important than, you know, Champions League quarterfinals or whatever, at least for Inter, and to establish that dominance within the league. And especially, you know, coming off of two amazing results and being 7 points behind Milan and now, or whatever it was, like 5 points, and now only 1 point behind and controlling your own destiny. It made sense. I didn't agree with some of the changes, but what can you do? Cagliardini is your second option off of the bench when it comes to midfielders. I still have PTSD from Cagliardini since he arrived. Last match with Juventus, I think he was the one that got subbed in for Brozovic. And just imagine that beautiful sight of Gagliardini setting up the game, the tempo, the pace, whatever.
Okay, bro. Why are you saying that? Hold that thought. So do you guys agree now, or can we agree, or is it too soon to say whether we agree or not that Sensi should have been kept? Because no. He's been able to maintain some sort of fitness at Sampdoria, right? But go ahead, Rousseau.
He hasn't been able to sustain fitness at the Inter for 2 years.
Injured. I thought he was still injured. I thought he picked something up at Sampdoria too. Has he been playing recently?
Let me check.
He played. Last match he played. I was watching.
He has played 45 minutes. In March, he has played 76 minutes, 65, 70, 15 for Italy, and then 45 for Sampdoria in the last match against Roma. We've praised him a lot, and I think he was the best player or the best midfielder that we have seen, or at least I have seen since Snyder back in 2011, 2010. For 10 years, we haven't seen a midfielder at Inter fit in within the first month that well and play an amazing football. There were rumors for Barcelona within the first month. Like, we spoke on one of the episodes with Mike and whoever it was at the time. Like, there were rumors, and it goes to show you the form that he was in. We also spoke about Sensi, whether he was supposed to be or whether he should be bought or not. I think we agree that there might have been, you know, a gentleman's agreement for Inter to buy Sensi because, you know, let us, instead of paying 25 now, we'll pay you next year and we get him on loan. I think that deal was some sort of that, and no sane person, and especially not Marotta, would have signed Sensi, an injury-prone player, for 20 to 25 million when Inter didn't have a lot of money. It was fishy from the start, and, you know, whether we agree or not, I don't think he could have gotten any minutes at Inter. He needed starting plays. He needed to play. Sampdoria offered that. You offload him for 6 months. See how his fitness goes. If it was up to me, either try to sell him for something this summer, or, you know, try to flip him for a better prospect for, I don't know, Raspadori, Scamacca, if Inter is interested in him as well. Because I think Sassuolo fits him the best. He can play partial football. He's not a 2 matches per week player. He's too injury prone. Like, it's so mad. Do I agree with him going out alone? I do. Back to the point that he needs playing time, and that's the sole point. I think he's an amazing player when on his day, but we've seen him be, when he came off of injury, he was like scared. I don't know if you remember how Zanetti played after his Achilles injury. Like, he was not the same like intensity player after the injury. He seemed a bit of scared, cautious. He didn't go into tackling that hard. I don't know.
You made a very valid point, and that's why I like bouncing those ideas with you guys when they come up to me live, because you guys sometimes live on the air, you guys talk me out of my personal ideas and stuff. But Here's the thing. I think it was more of a situation where, I guess now hindsight is 2020. It was about, okay, this year's a World Cup year. I want to play and all that stuff. And a World Cup that Italy ended up not even qualifying for, by the way. Risto's boys had something to do with that. But but I guess that's what it was about. But when you look at bringing Vidal and Gagliardini off the bench, man, it's hard to really think, damn, can Sensi be worse, or would Sensi have been worse? But I guess I do agree with you. He's a player that needed minutes from the start. He would have never been a player that you throw in with 20 minutes left or 15 minutes left for him to make a quick impact. He's a player that needs to feel the game and play himself into the game. So I agree. I mean, we can argue all we want about the quality of Gagliardini and Vidal, but I think it's still the best move that the club made. Hopefully he could get us 15 million or so, you know. And I don't know what his value is nowadays.
At the end of the day, I think Serie A is a league, and Italy as a country has been proven to be more fit to players that are reliable on a weekly basis. Mattia De Ciglio made a career out of that. Gagliardini has been at Inter for years and years. D'Ambrosio has been at Inter for like, what, eight
Great
years
points.
Now.
Great points.
And week in, week out, we see, you know, players that are not starting or could not start for any like top club be crucial part for a Juventus team that won like 9 Scudetti in a row. You know, players like Mattia De Ciglio couldn't play at Olympique Lyon, a team that finished like, what, 14th in League One. And you see him starting week in, week out for Juventus for a world-class coach like Allegri. Darmian as well. You know, there's a reason why Conte and Mourinho wanted him on their respective clubs. Like, I think that's the key point when it comes to Italian football and Italian coaches. And since he's not that, Gagliardini made a career out of that. And he has been, you know, he has zero talent when it comes to football. Like, he's the most untalented player I've ever seen. And he's been at the top club for years and years. Yeah. You know, kudos to him.
Yeah, for sure. So, what you guys want to touch on the teams that helped us out and also speak about...
I want to hear Mike about that.
Yeah, he was muted. I saw him talking.
Oh, yeah,
but he was
yeah.
Muted.
I was hoping everyone missed it, but yeah.
Oh shit! We got Perisnitch in the is that Perisnitch we have in the comments?
Yeah,
that's crazy.
Yeah.
The legend.
He's gonna make a meme out of us if we don't answer his question. So we got to get to that. but I do want to say that I don't think Sensi's gonna be at the club next season. I think what Risto said that, you know, he can either bring us, you know, a little bit of cash that the club still needs, or, you know, he knocks some price off of a guy that we want. I see that happening more than I see him integrating back into this club. Maybe there's a better fit for him somewhere. I don't know, but yeah, I don't think it's here.
Yeah. I mean, us fans, we do tend to get attached to players, you know, and we it's hard to let go sometimes, but yeah, I think we've given him ample amount of chances. You know, we've been patient with him. He got injured. We waited. Got injured. We waited. It's been 3 years now, you know. So it's time to cut him loose and hopefully, like you guys said, either get a little cash or throw him into a deal for Scamacca or Bremer or whoever that we'd like, you know.
Yeah, ooh, I think Juric could do a job with him.
I wanted to say that. Yeah. Him under Juric would be interesting.
Yeah, and at Inter, like, I mean, you need to be able to play more than kind of on the reliability thing. You need to be able to play like 2 matches a week, pretty much. Like, I mean, you're not always going to have to rotation and all that, but you need to be able to do that. And I don't think he can handle
his,
that.
His body can't sustain it, no.
Yeah, no, he just doesn't have it. But yeah, you wanted to go into upcoming schedule, or you want to go into the teams that dropped points in the past couple of days or today?
The team that dropped points, I think,
okay,
first.
Okay. All right, let's look at that then. Of course, Napoli losing 3-2 earlier in the day to Fiorentina. Fiorentina absolutely played one of the best games I've seen them play this season. I know, especially the Cabral goal. Like, that was something.
Yeah, it was the game.
You didn't watch it?
No.
Okay, well, I didn't watch it either. No, was I watching at that point? I forget. I know I saw the clip, but it's a nice goal.
Nah, I woke up just on time to make sure I watch every game today. I don't know. It's like I had a feeling. I just had a feeling, man. Yeah, Napoli. I can't put my finger on it. What the issue is with them, because most of their. You can say it when it's your turn, Risto. but I don't know, man. It's like I don't know if it's a mentality thing, because you would think that they have great mentality by the way they beat Lazio the other day with that last minute goal and stuff. But they seem uninterested for parts of the game, and they conceded three good goals from Fiorentina. But again, it's not like Fiorentina or slouches either. This is a team that almost beat us before the Juventus match. They're very worthy. They're under Italiano, and we know Italiano's been taking the league by storm for the last 3 years. He's the new hot topic in Italian football. So credit to him. He finally beat a team in the top four, and it couldn't happen in a better time for us. I did have a little doubts, because a couple times Napoli did score, it looked like they were gonna either come back to draw or to win it. But thank God they were able to keep it and keep Napoli down. Right now we're equal on points, and we've played one game less. So that's something that, and they play Roma next game. You know, Roma, who's been in resurgent form. So it's not looking pretty for Napoli. I don't know, man. That's my thought on this game and the Napoli match. What you gotta say, Risto?
I'm just watching the highlights right now of Napoli Fiorentina. I think it's going to be, an interesting final of the season, especially when three teams are 1 point apart between each other, with Inter having the game in hand. Uh-huh. It's going to be very tough, but at the end of the day, we are playing the easiest schedule, because Milan are yet to play Sassuolo, Atalanta, Lazio, Fiorentina. And all of those in the space of five matches, you know, each other.
Yep.
I think the match against Spezia next week or on Friday has to be an easy win. First of all, Thiago Motta, thank you. Second of all, Spezia are, you know, a safe from relegation, although not mathematically. I think there are a lot of worse teams than them. Mm-hmm. They'll win some matches to secure that. But to go back to, or not back, but to answer a Sneetch's question, I think the Roma match being a derby that is, and maybe looking at the schedule. Wait, do you have the schedule to? So
everyone, yes, I have it right here. Oh no, is that, well, that's kind of spaced out. Let me see if I can get a little bit of zoom going. How's that?
Yeah,
that looks better.
So I think, if we think about the schedule, you know, critically, I think Roma, besides Mourinho, has nothing to play for, or maybe a European
League. Oh, he does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sorry. Spezia, nothing to play for. Bologna, on the standings, we know the story. They have to play for Mihailovic, but I don't know, Empoli. Not that. Let me see the standings. So Empoli is pretty much just as well as Spezia, pretty much safe. Udinese, nothing to play for, just above Empoli. So the final, I would say, seven matches, eight matches of the season are, you know, regardless of who the opponent is. I think the most important question is, do they need to play for something? Because Empoli, why would they play for? It's 8th of May. There will be three matches left. They will be secured. Who gives a fuck? Udinese away is always a tough match. Because that fucking name and that stadium, I hate everything about them. But fuck them. We have to win that. Bologna, I don't know. If I had to choose one match besides Roma, because at the end of the day, it's still Mourinho and it's still a good team, I would say Udinese away for some reason, or that team has some ick to me. I don't know why.
Oh, we got Anthony in the building as well. Everybody's showing love today, guys. Thank you, everybody.
Yeah, everybody's buzzing right now. I mean, we've got results we wanted for once. It's finally fun to go listen to other people talk about Inter again. I know I've been on.
I've been avoiding some podcasts.
Yeah, I mean, I've been listening to Inter Worldwide. I've been watching when they've been live. Been watching when Sharma was live, just because, you know, we got to come on here. We got to say our takes as well. But it's much more fun to hear other people's takes when it's not all of us doom and gloom. So yeah, it's been really fun. I see why Hristo does what he does.
Makes up excuses. I know,
back up here. Oh, where was it? Somebody just got.
Before you find something, I'm just looking at the table, and Atalanta at home are the 13th best team. So teams like, I don't know, Verona, Bologna, Udinese are better at home and have won more points than Atalanta.
Hey, Risto, don't act like you don't see the comment.
I've already replied.
He's a glory hunter.
I'm the embodiment of...
Yeah, I mean, I want to take a stab at Snitch's question as well. I feel like, yeah, Roma is the obvious answer. But looking at the fixture list, I believe we play Bologna in the midweek, right? So that's like right after playing Roma. So that's the game that I feel like could be a tricky game for us. Although they will be tired as well, because they will play on that Sunday as well. So we all will be on, 2 days rest. But it's a midweek game. We're going to be tired. And that's a team that, with the situation with Mihailovic, they want to play for him. They showed a lot of grinta against Milan. So I'm sure they're going to want to finish the season on a high end, on a high note for him. So this is a potential trap game. But again, guys, let's be honest. Compared to the other team's schedules, right now we're pretty much looking and forcing right now to say this team's going to be hard, that team's going to be hard. Whereas Milan got to play Atalanta, they got to play Lazio, they got to play Sassuolo, and they got to play the Fiorentina that just beat Napoli. And Napoli, they got to play. Who Napoli got to play? Look at the wrist, though. Napoli.
You got okay, I can pull up Napoli. I had Napoli's schedule. I just got to change tabs. Mm-hmm. This is
I don't know it by heart, but I know the tough games that they have left. They have Roma next week, and I think they still play Torino, Sassuolo. You know, so those are tough games.
Let me. I'm just looking at the best home teams in the league. So we're playing Udinese, who are 11th. We're playing Bologna, who are 12th. We're playing Spezia, 14th. We're playing Cagliari, who are 17th. Best team in the league at home. So we're not playing any of the top 10 teams.
Brothers of the doggies.
Dogs of the world. Something that I've really liked, I've been looking at after, I know Sharma used it on his stream, is the 538 simulations, and they do their predictions. Us predicted at 81.
I haven't seen this. Explain this.
Okay, so yeah, it's you know, a site that they do a lot of like polls and predictions through simulation and all that. I think they run about 1,000 simulations for this, and it changes, of course, with every match. So this is after the Milan loss. They have us at, of course, 99, more than 99%. We're going to qualify for the Champions League. But they have us now as the favorites by 40% pretty much to win the league. They expect 81 points through their simulations. But, of course, their simulations, you know, it's being played in algorithms, not on the pitch. So anything can change. But, you know.
And that's fully up to date after today's results and stuff?
Yes. This updates, like, every single match.
Okay.
Do they have like? Oh wait, I need to see this. Let me just
put this in the chat. So everyone
can share it to the chat. I need to use that website now.
right here. But yeah, I really like this. I've been checking this like incessantly. It's interesting. They have a lot of different things I haven't quite figured out because I'm not a mathematician.
Can you go back? Can you go down to the relegation battle?
Yeah. Right here.
Me.
Well, I'll go all the way up to Bologna, because I think that's the next close. Even though, yeah, they're less than 1% chance.
Well, basically, the bottom three stays the same.
Yeah, this is what they predict.
Bro, just look. Can you just scroll a bit up?
Up. Okay.
Yeah. Just look at this. We're playing. Wait. We're playing Udinese. We're playing Bologna, Empoli, Spezia, Sampdoria. All of them are like in space of like few points.
And just yeah, that's what I was saying earlier.
They're all safe.
That's what I was saying earlier, bro. That's what I was saying earlier. Listen, we want to be professional right now and say like, yeah, this might be a tough game. That might be a tough game. All of our matches except for Roma are against teams that are well in the well below 12th, 13th in the league.
Yeah.
Exactly. With the exception of like 49 points. Like we're playing all of those teams down there and Roma. That's it.
Yep. We got no excuse, man. We got no excuse. But speaking of, since we spoke about Napoli, Fiorentina, you guys want to touch on Torino? Well, I know you guys want to touch on Torino, Milan, since we didn't get to talk about Bremer.
We've been gung-ho and jumped on it a couple times. We've mentioned Bremer. But, I mean, like, starting with Bremer, I mean, that was the main guy on the pitch today. I know Belotti only really produced like one dangerous chance. It got blocked, which was, I think it was Tomori blocked it. It was a really good recovery. Yeah. I give him credit there. But yeah, other than that, I mean, another 0-0 for Milan. We know that they weren't scoring very much. Let me just pull up their schedule now. Yeah, they haven't been scoring very much.
I want to see that both of their schedule. I'm just feasting right now.
I don't know, man. I kind of miss Ian because I would have given Ian an assignment for him to find this clip for me. It's a clip of me saying,
"This is for Ian, you, bro."
Ian, if you're listening, talk in the chat. Ian, I need you. Okay. But no, I was joking. There was just a clip of me saying, like, listen, Milan, they're building a Scudetto challenge last month off of deflected goals. The goal that Giroud scored against us, the goal that Giroud scored against Napoli. And it's like, the luck is running out right now. They don't have a system offensively. If you're watching them, you see how they build up and play and how it's supposed to be. It's literally give the ball to Theo. Theo runs with it and tries to overlap over or combine with Leao or something, and hopefully something happens. That's what I see, and that's not sustainable, and that's why they can't score goals right now. And I'm happy that, well, I expected it to happen earlier, but better late than never.
I remember we mentioned it on the last episode that they were living off of these Giroud half chances, and now that he's gotten his, five, six, seven, maybe eight goals of the season.
Yeah, he's done.
Yeah, that's pretty much it for him. Leal's not producing from the wing. Teo's just flopping, throwing himself down every time he touches the ball.
Two matches?
Okay,
After Verona.
Yeah. Ooh. It gets worse.
I've been telling y'all, let's just wait. Okay, listen, if Milan, looking at this schedule, if Milan could
schedule,
beat
bro.
If they could beat Lazio, Fiorentina, Verona, Atalanta, and Sassuolo back-to-back, they deserve the trophy. They deserve it.
That's a challenge. That's a big challenge.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know where they're getting the goals from, but I mean, it's possible. I mean, anything's possible. I don't think they'll make that run. Unless Zlatan, I don't know, turns it back 10 years, but no, I don't see that happening either.
If anything, Zlatan is going backwards because he missed today's game because of knee inflammation or some shit. So if anything, it's going to be a situation of he's going to be back to training next week, try to place himself back into by the time he could be in match fitness, the season will be over, in my opinion.
Lazio fighting for who's their next game? Just above, just before they play us.
Yeah, let me Yeah, before us, they have Genoa. I mean, it's pretty easy. Genoa. But we have Spezia before.
Is it easy, though?
They had the draw machine.
They had 8 games in a row. They drew and drew, and they lost to Lazio on the weekend.
What's the record for draws in a season? What's the record for draws in a season?
They have like
16. They have like 16.
I'm a real. We had a team that was drawing. Mancini. Like, what the fuck? Yeah, under Mancini, bro. I'm sure
one of those 2016-17. Just like Genoa is fighting for relegation. Lazio, a European spot. Fiorentina, European spot. Verona at home, they will not bend over. And the last two games, Atalanta's fighting for European spot, and the last game is against Sassuolo. Scamacca and Raspadori.
Yeah, them boys always like to show off against the big teams.
Berardi as well. Nah, bro. If as they've said it perfectly, if they win all of those matches against such opponents like Atalanta, Lazio. Yeah, they absolutely. Yeah. Mike, what's your opinion on that?
Sorry, I'm just looking. I'm now on a rabbit hole trying to find who had the most draws in the season. I can't tell.
You could see Mikey was distracted by something. But let me take over while he's looking.
Yeah, I don't think it's a stat. Well, at least not one that I can easily find. If anyone else finds it, you know, shout to y'all. Yeah, but I can't find
you
it.
Did you do like a quick Google see if it pops up?
Yeah, I googled it a couple different ways. Serie A draw record, like most draws in a season for Serie A. Nothing really. Nothing came up. It just took me to like wins, home wins. Genoa were one away from the most consecutive draws at one point this season, but yeah, that's as close as I got. But yeah, if Milan can, I mean, pull it out.
Yeah.
But you know, the funniest thing would be they lose to Genoa and then they pull the rest of them off.
that's like Milan. But remember, I remember when we were looking at our schedule, that was around Christmas. Remember when we had that, I think it was in February, when we had that crazy run of matches. I think we had Juventus, Atalanta, Lazio, and then Liverpool, something like that, right? Yeah, and then we were discussing how when you have those big matches followed by other big matches, it sucks. It's kind of tough because those big matches, you put so much energy into it. You put so much of yourself into it. It's harder to recover. And imagine you do that and you have another big match that's going to require another big effort from you. There's no way they could do it. That's why I'm saying, like, openly, if they do manage to beat all those teams in that consecutive record that I see, they deserve it because we have a pretty soft schedule compared to them. But I wanted to touch on Bremer. This guy, man, I think he solidified it. I told myself I had a tweet trying to be funny, saying that he needs to act like an Inter player this weekend, and he sure did. Boy, what did he do, bro? Like, this guy was throwing himself like a rag doll. There was this last tackle on Messias. Well, he got hurt doing it, you know. So this is a guy, man. I can see him right next to Skriniar, and opposing attackers are going to be shitting themselves because those are two killers. Even though Bastoni is a little soft and Bastoni does make mistakes, you know, we saw Cuadrado eat him up a couple times against Juventus, and he does make mistakes like that. But having those two guys next to him, I would sleep well with that defense.
Yeah, that would be the best defense in the league by far. There's no way you could say no. But yeah, I wanted to go to this question from Mattia. It's about the Copa. It's something I feel like we've glossed over now. Yeah. How important is the game against Milan in the Copa? It could mentally be the championship game, despite it not being important for Serie A. Well, I mean, I don't want to call it quite that, just because, you know, Juve in a final, you never know. They can pull one out. A final is a final. Because I pretty much have them going through against Fiorentina. But it's tough, you know. I mean, you want to be in that Coppa final. You want to be right there in Serie A. It is something, you know, that we're used to seeing more in like March in Serie A, where we're coming up against a resurgent Milan who's found it out in the second half. Then we beat them pretty badly, you know, either like 3-0 or like some kind of crazy comeback heartbreaker for Milan, and then they slump
the season
to like fourth place for the rest of the season. Like, it could be something like that in the Coppa. You know, both teams kind of just punted on the first draw, on the first leg of this draw. They were like, "Yeah, we'll figure it out come April." And
come April,
have gotten better, and Milan have regressed. So, if you win that, I think you really do declare yourself, you know, the team that's going for the domestic treble.
And
the team that loses that, I don't know. You know, if it were for points, it would feel a lot better. But it's not for points; it is for mentality. I mean, we do miss that trophy. It's been a long time. It would be great to see.
I'm just looking at the 2005-06 season, and Chievo made it to the fourth place Champions League qualifiers with 15 draws. 13 wins, 15 draws, 10 losses. 15 draws is one more... or the same amount of draws as Cagliari, who finished 14th. Treviso finished 19th with 12 draws.
What year was that?
2005-2006, the year that Juventus got relegated.
I was like six.
Oh, okay. Oh, that was Calciopoli year.
Well, yes.
But I wanted to take a bite at Mattia's question as well. I do think that I find this match extremely important, that Coppa match. And I feel like we should go into it all guns blazing or best available squad and try to win it. Not rotation or anything like that. Not only because, of course, we want to play in the final and we want a chance at winning another trophy. Secondly, is because, like, I think that's what Mattia is kind of alluding to. It could give us a mental edge over Milan, because we don't know how they're going to do against Genoa, but right now we know that they're riding on 2-0-0 draws, you know, against Torino that they just had and against Bologna last week. You know, so imagine they can't score against Genoa as well. And it's another 0-0. They're going to come into this match facing us, having drawn three key matches and pretty much holding on by a thread, and they fight for the Scudetto. So I'm sure that if we manage to beat them in that Coppa final, we could give them a decisive blow, and we could pretty much cruise to the Scudetto, even if that Coppa match obviously doesn't have anything to do with the Scudetto. But yeah, I feel like psychologically it could be a big blow we give them. Especially right now, I'm sure they're doubting themselves. That's two matches that we thought on paper they would have won that they did 0-0. You know, so if hopefully the same thing against Genoa happens, and by the time they see us, it's going to be a lot of pressure, and we could just burst that bubble and kill them off. So hopefully that's how it happens. And like Mikey mentioned, when we played the first time, the first leg, it was their advantage because they were in much better form than we were. That was like a week after they had beaten us in the league, so they had the mental advantage, and we were shit in the bed. Now it's reverse, where our guys are catching their forms back, and their guys are struggling. So we better take advantage, and it's gonna be a home game more or less, because they were the home side. And another advantage that we have since then, they've opened up the stadium, so we're probably gonna have a full San Siro, and mostly Inter fans. Because we're going to be the home side. So that's another advantage. Yeah, I find this Coppa match extremely important. I'm looking forward to it. And I'll even admit that I even look past Spezia a little bit. Just so much I want to get my hands on Milan. Because I still remember Tonali acting up when Dumfries was trying to get Teo up. Teo acting up that match, that last time we saw them. So yeah, we got to give him a good whooping. So it's an important match to me.
Yeah, it's important, but I just I hope that no one, you know, picks up any kind of fatigue or injury or anything that goes into that Roma match. That's the only real thing I would worry about, is, you know, going at it for 90 to 120 minutes even against Milan, and then turning around and playing Roma on the weekend. And then you have Bologna. Oh, that's 3 days later. Yeah, that's a midweek right after that. So yeah, that's probably our last three match in a week-ish run of the season. Lord Figo is calling it his Scudetto, but I think everything's been his Scudetto recently.
Hey, be honest. Listen. Hey, Figo, man. Listen, this for you, Figo. This for you, because people not saying it. I'm going to say it on the Twitter as soon as I get off this, okay? Lord Figo came back to Twitter, and the next thing you know, we're climbing back up the table. Coincidence? I think not. I think the fuck not. Right, Lord Figo?
Oh, Lord. Yeah, I mean, it's facts. Yep. Anything we needed some kind of mojo and we got it. So
and you know him, he came back with his Lord Figo energy, like, yeah, fuck you, they fuck this, fuck that, Milan fans, we're gonna win the Scudetto. And that was, mind you, that was right after we drew Fiorentina. So I'm like, how does this guy do it? You know, but hey, listen, confidence, sometimes confidence makes shit happen.
Yeah, for sure.
Mike, what? I'm just looking at the standings while we were talking. In the past, and I found that in 1988-89 season, both Lazio and Verona have, fuck me, 19 draws.
That's half the season. Five, well, that was a smaller Serie A then, wasn't it?
How many matches?
34 matches.
Okay, over half, yeah.
Damn. So they have the same record. And so basically they have five wins, 19 draws, 10 losses.
And where on the table did they finish?
10th and 11th. And the relegation spaces are 15, 16, 17, 18. In the last place, Como had one more win than both of them. Basically 6, 10, and 18.
That's crazy. Well, there's your stat of the day.
Wow.
We talked about it, and this is one of the last things because we're running pretty long, but I know Dave mentioned something about overlooking Spezia a little bit, so let's look at that, get some predictions, and then go ahead and roll on out. Spezia, what did they do last match? I don't even know what kind of form they're in. Okay, yeah, lost to Venezia. Oh no, beat Venezia, lost to Sassuolo in their last two of their last three. Then 0-0 to Empoli yesterday. They're kind of a little bit above that dogfight. Thiago Motta has done a better job than I think most were expecting with that team. We've seen Milan go there and get their season completely derailed. So just hoping that, you know, that's not the same fate for us. So what do you guys see in that match? What are you looking for, hoping for? Is it another Correa match? What's happening?
You know what? I'd like for it to be a Lautaro match, you know, because, you know, we say it here all the time. He's a tricky player. He's a guy that he's going to go five without scoring and then score in the three or whatever. So hopefully out of the seven matches we have left, he can find a three in a row that he could score for us. So we saw he was Salernitana man. Hopefully he could turn into Spezia man for us. Hopefully he could turn into Spezia man against a weak opponent and get his mojo back, you know, and going into Milan and Roma and stuff. We need him firing. So that's what I would do. I would actually start Lautaro. Probably start Lautaro and Correa, you know, or Sanchez, because we haven't played Sanchez the last two matches. He's not injured or anything. So I'd probably start those two, rest Dzeko for sure. Dzeko needs a little rest. And then hopefully we could get something started. But yeah, I think we need to get Lautaro firing, man. Like, we need all hands on deck.
Yeah, for sure.
I want to see the same match as it was the case with Verona. You know, early lead, many chances, a stable second half where we don't press much, we don't lose any energy, and keep everything for the midweek match against Milan.
Yeah. Hopefully this is another one where, you know, come out guns blazing in the first half, get your 2-3 goals. Maybe even Gosens can get a start in there sometime, because you do have Milan and you can do a little bit of rotation when you have the two best left wing backs in the league that you can just do that with. So maybe that's his first start. You know, I like the Correa Lautaro shout. Even Dzeko Correa, I think, but I think Correa needs to play again with one of the other three strikers in this team. Mm-hmm. And I would take, you know, a 3-1 win in this one.
We ain't conceding, bro. We ain't conceding. You seen Handanovic lately? You seen Handanovic lately?
That is rolling it back for the end of the season.
Yo.
Speaking of, listen, we cannot have an Interpod without touching on Onana's comments yesterday. All right, I know you guys seen him.
Keep all guns blazing. You
know he's ready to be at a bigger club and a bigger league.
I would not have said anything. I would just come out like this. That's it.
That's what he did, just in vocal and words.
I don't know, man. I don't know how I feel about it, honestly, because it's all fun and games until he starts playing for us, and then he's having a couple bad games, and we're criticizing him, and he's directing that same energy towards us. You know, part of it could be like, hey, this guy is like Martin, like Mikey said, he's had enough. Those guys have been criticizing and acting like entitled little brats ever since they found out that he's not gonna sign with them. And but I also saw another part of the conversation where he said, like, listen, I welcome criticism from my coaches and the technicians, whoever, but fans, if they want to move, they want to cry, if they want to do whatever, I don't give a shit. So when I saw that second version, I was more like, yeah, you know what, that's logical. But, you know, of course, for clicks, the version that was going around was where they just show him saying fans could cry, fans could criticize, they could do whatever, I don't give a shit, you know. But I don't know, but even further than those comments, are you guys worried at all about his form, guys? Because, listen, I'm running out of defenses now, man. Because,
bro, he hasn't played in a year.
But that's what I've been saying to everybody as well. He hasn't played in a year. But ever since he came back, January, it's been mistakes, howlers.
Imagine not running for like a year, and then you start a fucking marathon. What do we expect? He needs
consistency. Go ahead and talk me out of it, bro. I'm just telling you how I feel.
I'm not worried about it. I'm not worried about it at all either.
Just look at the keeper that we have right now, and you know.
He's got 14 clean sheets. You know what?
The keeper that we have right now, he's got 14. He's old and finished. You know what I mean? So.
We're getting a guy at least four years.
If he can make it behind the back three we have right now, Onana can make it behind Bremer, Skriniar, and Bastoni.
Ooh, fucking amazing case.
Bremer, bro, this guy.
But yeah, Onana, I think he's going to be fine. You know, give him some more time playing, some live minutes. Give him a full preseason. He hasn't been able to train with any other actual professionals. Like, he's been doing it by himself with some coaches. He has not seen live gameplay. That's the big thing for me. And you know, he's still young for a keeper, mid-20s, getting late 20s ish. So there's time. I feel like that probably was a setback for him though. So I feel like it will take him some time.
I hope you guys are right.
I was a two.
I hope you guys are right, because my thing, I was always thinking that it's probably going to take a couple months to play consistently, or probably after the AFCON where he was the starter consistently, for him to get his shit back and like get his mind right. But maybe it's taking longer, you know. But I just wanted to admit that, yeah, I am beginning to be a little worried, because those errors are piling up. And, you know, the rival fans, they do not miss a beat, you know. They're always there to retweet shit and show, oh, this is the guy that Inter is going to have. You know? So that's what it was.
They better worry about their sporting director not being able to make a fucking penny out of the best three players that they've lost on free. So keep on jogging.
Keep on jogging. I was waiting for that.
I haven't heard that in a minute.
A classic. But, I feel like we've covered just about everything we can. If we have Spezia on a Friday, we'll probably be on Friday or Saturday. I know Milan also play Friday because of the Coppa. We play first.
We play at 7 p.m. and Milan play a 9 p.m. game on Friday.
Yeah. Italian time. if our schedules permitted, let's try to come on after all three teams have played, just like we did today, and we'll have a more like a...
When does Napoli play?
I don't know, but it's probably going to be Sunday because they play Roma. So that's probably the marquee game of the round. It's probably going to be the last game. Yeah, 2:45 Sunday.
On the 16th. On the 16th is Saturday night.
Oh, okay. So we.
Oh, sorry. My bad.
About the 16th? Yeah, wow, 16th is a Saturday.
No, Saturday. They're playing next Monday. Monday at 7 p.m.
Monday.
18th of April, 19:00 Italian time.
All right, we could pop before that. Man. We're not gonna wait for that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're falling off right now. Anyway. So.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. It's probably gonna be up in Milan.
But yeah. Any final comments from you guys? Anything you want to shout? Anything that's going on?
Bro, it was fun, that, man.
Bring me that African sauce from Onana, bro. Bring me that shit.
Oh no, I'm still excited for Onana. I'm not gonna worry about that.
Yeah, but my final thoughts, man, it was a fun episode. I mean, mainly because of the results of arrivals. We talked a lot of shit. And of course, as always, our boys are very active in the comments. Thank you guys. Lord Figo, you're not gonna get my shirt yet. You know the rules already. Benjamin, I see you always encouraging Lord Figo to ask us for stuff. I don't like that. Who else? Matia, thank you. Indro Hari, Uncle Sharma, everybody that came through. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, everybody.
Sean Collins
sounds like a British name.
Who?
Sean Collins just commented.
Sean Collins. Yeah, Sean Collins.
Oh, yeah. That's one of the guys that's always there, too.
Yeah. 14. We I think it got up to like 15, 16 at one point. Really cool. It's good to see. Everyone's back after a win, just as Risto is. So, yeah, it's been a good one.
I want to say just, you know, I haven't been on the podcast since we beat Italy. Yeah. Fuck you.
Hey, Risto, answer that last question because I've been wondering as well.
Risto, are you named after Risto Stoichkov?
Nah. but it might... I might have been because I'm a fucking great striker. And
what a note to end on. That thing, that's a good note to end on. We'll be back. We're gonna conclude, but yeah, we'll be back after hopefully another win. Hopes are gonna be high. And yeah, I look forward to seeing everyone in the next one.